Well, I think we'll just go ahead and get started here. My name is Ryan O'Hara. I'm also known as the application owner from this morning. I got to hang out on stage, write a lot, and work in a new product capability called App Controller. You saw me deploying applications. You saw me in self-service portals requesting capacity. And I was trying to throw some bombs over to Vijay, who was supposed to use his private cloud capabilities to satisfy all of the application needs and keep that SLA up along with me. What we wanted to do today was walk you through the keynote and really just give, you know, tell you the story of how we put this stuff together. You know, I think too often you get these keynotes that look like it was a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and you wonder, can this really be achieved? Was that too simple to pull off? Or were they really doing something behind the scenes that was incredibly complicated to make all of this work? And we were certainly doing some shortcuts behind the scenes that we'll talk to you about. One example is when I applied some load to the application. You know, we had this kind of silly UI for applying the load, and in fact, we had a we had a PowerShell script behind the scenes that we were we had somebody else sitting behind the stage and making everything work. So, I'll walk you through some of those things along with the team here. We're going to have a bunch of presenters coming up and really spending time in the consoles. We're not going to do a whole lot of slides. We've really invested time in sharing with you the steps we take in System Center to make those things happen. The goal of that is then that you have an idea of what sessions you might want to go deeper and learn about later on this week, and also what investments you might want to make when you go back to your organizations. So let's get started and kind of do the blow-by-blow of this keynote this morning. The first slide that came up where we really knew we were going was when Brad said, you know, System Center 2012 is now generally available for all customers. I can tell you that we're joined in Vegas by about 200 or so of the engineering team from System Center. We developed the product across a very large base in Redmond, as well as a couple of engineering centers that are distributed around the globe. And there was a sigh of relief as we all said, okay, it's done. And now we're moving on, of course, to the future enhancements of the product that we showed later on in the keynote related to supporting Windows Server 2012. But really nice to get this one out the door. I can tell you that there is a lot of grinning behind stage. A lot of those people are here today, and it wouldn't be right to jump in and start telling the story without introducing you to a couple of them. We've got pictures here of folks that are in the audience and are teaching sessions throughout the week. I can tell you that this is a world-class organization, and I'm just incredibly proud to be a part of it. Now, while these folks are the ones that have ultimately built System Center 2012, and folks that you will meet as you go throughout the conference, you should also know that there are a group of customers that we work hand-in-hand with that Brad mentioned in the keynote. He talked about this technology adoption program, basically early adopters of our technology who take risks with us to deploy early versions of System Center 2012, pre-release versions, in their environment on production applications and allow us to sit with them at the consoles to understand what problems they're running into, how they want to use our tools, and this becomes an incredibly beneficial relationship for us. I've highlighted just a couple of the logos here, the ones that we can sort of share on slides at big events. And what I love about our TAP program is they represent a whole bunch of vertical industries, a whole bunch of customers from all different sizes, and they bring to us very different challenges, each one of them. It's a privilege to work with them as we put together this product. And just as we all had a sigh of relief, I tell you that these guys had a lot to celebrate as well. Some of the things that we achieved with our TAP partners, Brad touched on some of the higher level metrics. Man, operations manager just across our TAP customers was managing about 90,000 servers, both physical and virtual, by the end of our TAP engagement. Virtual Machine Manager was in 22 production installations, and Orchestrator was also in 11 production deployment scenarios. You can see DPM was backing up and protecting over 3,000 servers, some of them as virtual hosts, and therefore the virtual guests that were running on there as well. So a ton of work that we got done with our TAP partners. Now, one of the customers that we've been working, I would say, closest with is T. Rowe Price. Brad gave you a quick snippet of some of the progress we've made with T. Rowe over the course of the System Center 2012 build. I'll roll a quick video so you guys can see the full extent of the T. Rowe story.
T. Rowe Price is a global investment management firm. We're committed to providing the best services to our customers, and IT is a major part of that commitment. We chose to move to a private cloud infrastructure to give us the agility to continually meet the needs of our clients. The benefits for System Center 2012 is actually twofold. One is in our ability to manage our technology, and secondly, in terms of our operating model and how we're going to manage this new environment. We're growing 25% per year, and cloud computing is our answer to make sure that we can be sustainable as we provide Windows-based solutions to our organization. Automation frees us from the repetitive tasks that an administrator has to do to maintain the environment, and now all of our tasks become more strategic instead of repetitive. The big thing for us that was very exciting to us around System Center 2012, that it gave us a platform, which is analogous to what we're going to be doing today with clouds. You're talking about fabrics, now you're talking about a management platform that can manage that fabric as a single entity. I want to operate this environment as efficiently as possible that I can for T. Rowe Price in delivering those services to our customers. I could do that now at System Center 2012. It is truly a game changer. And we're going to take full advantage of it here at T. Rowe Price.
So a big hand for T. Rowe, and a big thank you from Microsoft for all the work that they've done in deploying System Center in their environments. So now we're ready to go, and we've moved into a fully released version of System Center at T. Rowe, and we're moving forward on new projects. So let's get into the keynote itself. And what you have represented up here is hardly the keynote infrastructure. We've got a laptop up here that's remoting into a demo rack that is sitting in the backstage. We've got a Win8 slate. We're not running much of the demos that you're going to see off of this, nor were we doing that off those podium machines. Those were basically consoles that are allowing us to remote into a backstage infrastructure that was pretty significant. And we had a set of operators sitting behind stage shadowing every click. In the case of a failure, the demoer gets to hit a switch and fail over into a redundant environment that would have been followed along for every demo or every one of the demoers' clicks. So you have the safety net as you're going up there. Now today, nothing failed. That was a great thing. And everything you saw was real software running on real servers that were backstage at the keynote. Now, the first demo that we saw was the proactive infrastructure. This was one where, I'll walk you through the four of them. The first demo was the proactive infrastructure one. That was Vijay Tiwari showing you how fabric administration was being expanded upon in Virtual Machine Manager primarily. The second one was myself coming out and talking about this concept of the app owner working in App Controller, again, primarily, to request new capacity and deploy applications using service templates, a component or a capability that we have in Virtual Machine Manager. The third one was when I came back out and we looked at this production application, and we were operating off of this this Operations Manager dashboard environment, and then we moved into some of our new APM capabilities that are in Operations Manager. And then the third one was when we started to look at the futures, both for System Center 2012 as well as for Windows Server, now we get to say it 2012. And we saw Jeff Woosley take the stage along with myself to show some of the capabilities in the core platform, some of the enhancements then to our management platform in the form of Virtual Machine Manager as well as in App Controller, so we shine all of those benefits through the entire stack. So we'll take you through this first one here. What was in our mind here, the reason we picked this this particular demo was Virtual Machine Manager more and more is going beyond just the provisioning of a VM. In some ways, it's sort of a misnamed product at this point. It has both infrastructure and application capabilities in the console, in the tool. In addition to this, it's taken a more expansive role when you think about overall infrastructure management. We've gone to take a more aggressive position in managing storage, in managing network devices. And you saw a lot of that come together in Vijay's story. Some of the things that that he walked you through from a Fabric Manager perspective was, first of all, reaching out and taking the physical server and incorporating that into his private cloud environment. This required us to do bare metal provisioning of the machine and build a Hyper-V host after discovering the machine over the network using out-of-band protocols. So you saw things like IPMI and Smash. Those are new investments that we made so that we can talk out of band to baseboard management controllers from your OEMs. You saw him as well use a host template so that he could provision that Hyper-V host the same way he had done all of his other Hyper-V hosts that were eventually in the cluster that he added that resource to. And we're going to walk you through all of that today. Network and storage, again, you saw far more aggressive management of network and storage. You saw him reaching out over protocols like SMIS in order to configure the storage pools. Now, there was another piece that Vijay didn't really walk you through, but I took a dependency upon. When I asked to deploy an App Controller, when I deployed a new service, I showed you this service template. I told you it was a recipe for my application. Well, in order to have done that, when I went to the library of service templates, I was actually reaching in and grabbing a Virtual Machine Manager artifact. That would have required Vijay and I to sit down and actually model out the application and talk about, you know, what does this application contain, what are the tiers, what are the configurations of each tier, what are the connection strings between the app logic and the databases, and we'll show you how we achieve that in that work in Virtual Machine Manager, so then it can be presented up into the app controller interface for an app owner like myself. So in order to do this, I want to invite Stephen Barron to the stage. Stephen works in our Fabric Services team, focusing primarily on Virtual Machine Manager, and is really one of the big thinkers behind these concepts of the service, as well as the innovations in the Fabric. So, Stephen?
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, everyone, for coming out and partaking in this session. So this morning you saw, again, Vijay walking through Fabric creation. Is it really that easy? And in a nutshell, it is. He had some things that were pre-set up behind the scenes that he used to enable that easy provisioning of Hyper-V hosts. I want to walk you through a couple of those artifacts. So the first thing he needed, and Ryan alluded to this just a second ago, is a host profile. Because when I'm deploying hosts, I want all of them to look the same. And I can have more than one host profile. Maybe my pre-production hosts look a little bit different than my production hosts. So I'm going to open up a typical host profile that Vijay would have used this morning. And you see I have just a general pane for a name. I say which VHD I want, and I'm going to boot from VHD. I can decide not to convert the VHD to fixed type during deployment. Generally, you're going to convert to fixed. In my hardware config, I get to specify the management NIC, disk, partitioning schemes. I can add additional disks and additional partitions. And I can also do custom driver matching to make sure that when my machine's provisioned, I'm getting the right drivers installed so that that host is ready to go. My OS configuration, I can specify which domain that host is going to join, the credentials used to join the domain, what the initial admin password is going to be, any product key, and for settings that we haven't exposed directly in this UI, I can go ahead and attach a custom unattend file, and we're going to merge our settings with the settings in the answer file and go ahead and complete the provisioning of that machine per your specifications. And finally, I can specify default placement paths for that particular, any host that gets provisioned from that host profile. So the second thing Vijay shows you is how easy it was to create a cluster. So after I've gone ahead and provisioned
a Hyper-V host, and I know that all my hosts look the same because they're using the same host profile. In my fabric space, I can simply click Create Hyper-V Cluster. VJ showed you a drag and drop operation. I only have to provide a cluster name. I choose a run as account to perform the operation. Here I'll use a domain account that's been set up for me. And then I can go ahead and choose which node or nodes I want to initially provision into this cluster. So in my production environment, I have one standalone host. In my pre-production environment, I have a couple standalone hosts. I'm going to go ahead and create a new cluster. I could skip cluster validation tests. Normally, I wouldn't do that either. We'll give you a full report of cluster validation tests. I add one or more nodes to the cluster. I then get to allocate storage that I've already imported into VMM, again, using SMIS. I can do formatting, convert those to CSV. And then for each NIC that happens to be on that host, I can go ahead and create virtual switches during cluster creation time to make sure that when machines are provisioned into that cluster, either at initial time or added later on, they all have a uniform networking configuration so that I know when I move my machines around through live migration and VMM features like dynamic optimization, my machines can land on all of those hosts and they're going to have access to the network resources they need. I click Next, I get a summary page, click Finish, and we're going to go ahead and spin up that cluster, create that cluster for you. So after my fabric's been set up, I've created my fabric for really one reason. That's to deploy virtual machines and to deploy services into that environment. Ryan showed you an app controller, the Contoso Expense application. And again, a couple minutes ago, he mentioned some work was done ahead of time in VMM. So in VMM 2008 R2, we provisioned standalone virtual machines. And in 2012, we created a new type of template called a service template that lets you define one or more machines that work together to provide a business service. If I switch over to the service templates view, I'll show you the service template for the Contoso Expense Manager application. Expense Manager is a three-tier application. Once this loads, I'm going to zoom in. It has a web tier, which is a front end. It has a mid-tier, which is running some web services. And it's got a SQL tier that's running SQL Server and has a database. And if I look at just the general properties of a particular tier, I can mark in the service template whether the tier can be scaled out, what the default instance count should be when I first deploy that application, that service, what the maximum and minimum instance counts are, and I can also specify application deployment orders. So perhaps I need my data tier deployed prior to my web service tier coming up, or I need my data tier first, my mid-tier second, and my web server tier third. If I look at the properties of a particular tier, the first thing I want to show you is in the OS configuration, I can specify Windows Server roles and features that should be installed on any machine that comes up for this tier. And in my application configuration section, I can define applications along with pre- and post-install scripts that should be installed. So I know that I'm deploying a server app V package and a web deploy package. So I have an initial pre-install script that's going to go ahead and install the server app V framework for me, and my /W command tells it to also go ahead and install web deploy. My web deploy application is going to be installed, and it has a particular parameter that expresses a connection string between that web tier and the backend tier. And you can mark these as what we call configurable service settings so that you can have the end user specify something like a connection string at deployment time. And this allows you to take a single service template, deploy it to dev, QA, staging, production, so you know that the recipe is being followed, you know that they're all being configured the exact same way, and the only thing that's changing between those deployments is, again, maybe a connection string. My server app B package also has properties, and I also execute from my web deploy package a pre-install script which prepares that machine to handle that web deploy package, configure some app pool settings, and so forth. The other tier I wanted to show you real briefly is the SQL tier, because in addition to deploying databases to that tier, we're also actually provisioning the SQL Server. So SQL Server 2008 R2 introduced the feature to prepare an instance of SQL that can be sysprepped. And what we'll allow you to do is complete that installation. So I can say, what's the instance name that I want? What's the installation run as account? For my configuration, who are the initial SQL Server administrators? Is it running in Windows mode or mixed mode? If it is running in mixed mode, what's the SA password going to be? which protocols do I want enabled at provisioning time? And very similar to our unattend functionality that I showed you in the host profile, if there are settings that you want configured for that SQL server, and we haven't exposed them as first-class properties in this UI, I can go ahead and attach a custom SQL server configuration file, and we'll do the same thing that we did with the unattend. We'll merge those settings with the settings that you've specified here and complete that installation of SQL. And finally, I can specify the security context for each of my core SQL services, such as the SQL Server service, reporting services, and the agent service. So after I've modeled this service and these sets of connected VMs, I now have a single-click configure deployment button, which is going to go ahead and provision these machines, install all the applications, configure the right roles and features, and get everything set up the same way every time that I click configure deployment, instead of following a 30, 50, or 60-page install doc where I misconfigure one setting and I need 20 people in the room to start troubleshooting. Now, after my service has been deployed, I want to monitor that service. And using our Ops Manager integration with VMM, we'll give you a bunch of rich, detailed views. First, I have a service health view in my VMM folder. That's going to show me the health of my services, along with any active alerts. And I also get an always up-to-date diagram view of that service in OM. And VMM will push this information based on state changes. So if I do a scale-out operation, we'll immediately push that new machine over and show it is under creation. And each of my tiers is going to express the VMs that happen to be in that tier. So I don't know about you, but in the past, prior to working at Microsoft, I worked in a large enterprise, and when we would have issues with an application, the first thing that inevitably happened is you get 20 or 30 people in a room to start diagramming out all the servers that contribute to that application. And inevitably, someone speaks up and says, well, we removed that server a couple weeks ago, and we actually added a new server to the web farm. But using System Center, you're always going to have an up-to-date diagram of that service and the virtual machines which power that service available to you in Operations Manager. You also saw a scale-out demo this morning that Ryan explained was driven primarily by PowerShell, but what we've been working on and will be making available at some point is a sample pro pack, which uses our performance and resource optimization with Operations Manager to automatically trigger scale-out operations based on your parameters. And if I show you what some of those overrides look like, we have what we call a service tier monitor in that management pack, and I can go ahead and configure overrides for that particular monitor, for a specific service, all services. And I'll just show you some of the properties we make available. So we have an interval, and this is the interval at which we're going to run calculations against the service. We have a number of samples that we want to collect over that interval. We allow you to define which performance counter you want us to watch. So in this case, the default is percent processor time. It could be something like IIS current connections, available memory. And then we have a perf threshold that we define and allow you to override, where you can say, if percent processor time is over 80%, then that's going to factor into the calculations that we're performing. We have a tier scale-out threshold. And what that means is, what's the percentage of virtual machines in that tier that are above that threshold, at which point I'm going to initiate a scale-out operation? So if I had two machines in my tier and one of them voted to scale out, that's only 50%, so we wouldn't do a scale-out operation. And again, this is also customizable by you. But if I had three machines in the tier, and all three of them voted to scale out, then we'd go ahead and initiate a scale-out operation. So monitoring my service is great. I also need to monitor my fabric. And one of the things we really pride ourselves on is that multi-hypervisor management, where we have support for clearly Hyper-V, VMware, and Citrix Zen Server. And we also have a really rich partner ecosystem. And the other thing I wanted to show you in Ops Manager is for my VMware environment, we have a great partner, Veeam, which produces a fantastic management pack for monitoring my VMware environment. And I just want to show you a couple of those views from Veeam. The first one I'll start with is this all VMware state view. And what this is going to give me is a detailed look at my current VMware cluster state, all my individual host state, as well as the VM state for all the VMs running in my VMware environment. And they also have a great topology diagram view that allows me to really drill down into the details of my VMware deployment. So here I have a virtual data center. Underneath that, I have a host and clusters folder. And underneath there, I have my VMware resource pools that are in that environment, my host clusters, as well as my individual hosts. And then for any individual host, we can see this one is marked in an unhealthy state, and I can drill in and find out exactly why. In this case, it's because I have one or more unhealthy VMs, but all of these objects are contributing and rolling up to the health of that host. RAM, sensors, storage, great management pack, really provides fantastic monitoring through Operations Manager of that VMware environment. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoy the rest of the session and have a great MMS.
All right, so as Stephen showed you, we keep lighting up the platform with management packs to give more insight across different managed entities in your environment or in a cloud environment. An example of a cloud object that we're introducing new management packs for is the SQL Azure Management Pack that's just been released that works in concert with System Center. Now, in addition to this, Stephen mentioned the partnership that we have with Veeam to give insight across VMware environments. Now, this is very important because one of the things I said was that when I'm looking at my applications from a diagnostic view, I get all of this insight from System Center about the application. But I really don't get a lot of help from the infrastructure as to what the, or from a VMware tool as to what the application is all about. But what we can do with our Veeam partnership is bring all of the application insight of System Center on top of a VMware infrastructure so that you get the best of both worlds. So as part of today's announcement, what we're sharing with you is that Veeam's agreed to offer a 10 processor management pack license for free to all System Center 2012 customers. This means that if you want to integrate VMware Insight into your System Center environment, you can do so by incorporating the Veeam Management Pack, which is now available for download at the URL here, which is veeam.com/sc2012. So we encourage you to get started with, again, a trusted partner who's been delivering a ton of great insight across any hypervisor, across any data center with System Center. At the end of each demo, we'll make sure that you have some call-outs for must-attend sessions here, and you can see one of the VMM sessions that Stephen thought you might want to go and take a look at. Now, in terms of the second demo, all about the app, here we really showed a couple of things in action, self-service and automation. And this brought us into the service catalog, which was accessed by way of a web portal. And from there, we initiated some runbooks that drove automation by way of System Center orchestrator capability. And again, we were interfacing everything through this self-service portal, which was an out-of-the-box component that we shipped in Service Manager in the 2012 timeframe. So from a Service Manager standpoint, it played the role of providing us that self-service portal, where I had my user identity recognized. It had an understanding of my Active Directory domain credentials. We had customized some forms to publish the offerings that I got to go and browse through. And we were exposing that via SharePoint portal. On top of that, once the request was made, all of the connector work that we've done across Service Manager and Virtual Machine Manager and Service Manager and Orchestrator really started to shine. We were able to call upon Orchestrator to fire a runbook and drive some of the task automation in the background. We also had a deep understanding of that service, not just between Virtual Machine Manager and Operations Manager, as Stephen just showed, but also that service was loaded at the same time in deployment into our CMDB, and we were able to understand that the notion of that service in Service Manager as well. And then Orchestrator really took off looking at how to check to see if that service had been deployed and started injecting the antivirus packages, doing the DPM configurations against that service and deploying the SCOM agents. So I want to give some time to two demoers now. The first will be Mark Umeno from our Service Manager team, and followed by Mark will be Ravi from the Orchestrator team, who will walk us through the orchestration capabilities. Mark.
Thanks, Ryan. So during the demo this morning, you might have had some questions about the Service Manager capabilities. What is available in the Service Manager portal? How are requests offered in that portal through the service catalog? And how does Service Manager enable you to automate processes across the people in your organization? So let's start off by looking at the Service Manager portal here. It's a Silverlight forms hosted in SharePoint that's extensible, as Ryan mentioned. The home page is the service catalog, which contains offerings from IT to their users. But in addition, there's some other capabilities, like help articles, my requests, where you can track the status of your requests, and my activities, where you can approve a request or fulfill a manual activity. So now let's drill down into the service catalog and look at the request that was used in the demo this morning. So you see that there's a simple form to fill out. And I'll fill things out, pick some choices there. And notice that some of these things are actually shown back in a read-only fashion. I can review my choices, click Submit, and that creates a service request in Service Manager, right? SR7323, I can click on that, and that takes me over to the My Request area where I can track the status of that request. Okay, so now let's switch over and look at how that request was offered by in the Service Catalog by looking at the Service Manager console. Okay, so this is the Service Manager console. It has a number of workspaces, so this is the administration workspace. You can see some of the connectors that were created within Service Manager. Down here is where the data from those connectors are put into this configuration management database, and you can manage those there. Work items has the tickets available in Service Manager. And the library workspace is where you can author content for Service Manager. So if we go into the service catalog view and look under the request offerings, these are the set of offerings that are offered in this particular service catalog. But you have the ability to author whatever services that are right for your organization by simply filling out a wizard. So let's see what it takes to do that by looking at the offering that was used in the demo. All right, so here's the form for that. You can see here's the title that we saw in the portal, the description. This is the template, the service request template that was used. We'll go into a little more detail about that later. And then here's where it's stored in a management pack. What's useful for that is as you author these things, say, in a pre-production environment, you can simply export them and import them into a production environment and use your work there, too. In the user prompt section, here's where you fill out the text that is displayed for the questions. Here's where we said, here's this display-only property. You can configure the output there. And here's where you map the output onto the service request. So this, as the portal answers are filled out, this is where they're mapped onto the ticket itself. And down here in the publish session, you can see there's an option where you can leave things in draft form while you're working on them, and then control and publish them when you're ready to do so. So it's simple as that to fill out a wizard and then offer these custom requests to your users. There's no development required. It's a simple experience. Okay, so now let's move over and think and look at what it takes in Service Manager to offer repeatable processes by looking at the service templates or the service request templates here. So down here, you see this is the template that was used in the keynote. We'll open that up. And the key thing to see here is that there's pre-populated values, right? There's values for urgency and priority. And down here, you see that every request that's generated through this template is going to be automatically routed to VJ. Now, here's an example of how you can have an automated, repeatable process by simply filling out the form, and it'll go to the right person. All right, so finally, I want to show you the actual request that we just created through the portal. So it's SR7323. Let's look at that one. Now here's the filled out form. You can see the values that I selected in the portal are now displayed on the request form. And you can see some of the values that were pre-populated for the template are shown up on this request as well, including that it was automatically assigned to VJ. So in this demo, you have seen how Service Manager can enable you to offer IT services through a simple self-service experience to your users, but still have a powerful capability to automate processes across the people in your organization.
Great job, Mark. Thanks. So you see a couple of You see a couple of key things there. One is the extensibility we offer in the portal, the extensibility we offer in the service catalog, so that you can offer, as Mark said, any IT service on the portal. That could be something like reset a password. And then that reset a password could end up firing orchestrator runbooks that could be customized to whatever task that you want to expose on that portal. Similarly, we try to make the authoring experience of the service catalog as simple as possible, and you'll learn about that in deep dive sessions on Service Manager this week. Now, I wanted to spend a little time on the orchestrator side of that, so we'll have Ravi come to the stage. Now, Ravi in practice told me that nobody really understands how to say his last name, and he's never really been introduced at a demo other than Ravi. And I said, that's no good. We just can't have that. So I would like to introduce to you Ravi Kiran Chintalapudi.
Okay, that's only my first name and last name. Thanks, Ryan. If I include my original name, it'll take another 5 minutes, so I'm not going to do that. Okay, automation. Let me first show you what we automated and where we used Orchestrator. I'll start with the going to self-service portal, which Mark showed us just now. In today's morning keynote, we have seen Ryan selected a couple of operations from here. He wants to back up the service once it's deployed. Then he wants to install some software, antivirus protection and ops manager agent. Well, in the past, we had to do this manually with involved process. And more importantly, there was a lot of handoff and handback between the different owners. But now with Orchestrator, we were able to automate this seamlessly. Let me show you how I built the runbooks to automate this. So let's jump to Orchestrator. As you all know, Orchestrator is a new addition to the System Center family. So I'll give a quick tour of the designer experience. So if you're seeing for the first time, this is the Orchestrator 2012 designer, or what we call authoring console. On the left-hand side, we have a tree view structure, which shows the runbooks you created, your folders, global settings. That's more like a library. If I move on to my right side, you see all the building blocks, what we call activities. This could be the activities which comes out of the box, which we call them standard activities, or the integration packs which you install. And in the center, what we call the workspace, that's where you drag and drop your activities and create your workflows and join them by links. And once you execute it, you can see some of the execution history of the log history. With that quick intro, let me jump on to the runbooks I built to automate the tasks. We built two runbooks to automate the task what we have seen in the portal. My first runbook monitors for the new service which we deployed. Then it queries for the service deployment state. When the deployment is successful, it starts a backup process. My second runbook, which actually does the job of backing up the resources, then installing the software. So let's dive into each of these runbooks. Okay. My first step in a runbook, all it is doing is monitoring for every 5 minutes and checking the status for the next activity. This is the step where I'm actually communicating or integrating with my virtual machine manager to get the name of the service which we deployed. I take that name as an input and call on my next step. This is again, I'm talking to my virtual machine manager to get the deployment state. As you can see, I've used some loops here. I want to get the status every 30 seconds. At the same time, let me see if I can zoom this a little bit. I do not want to exit this step until the deployment status is equal to OK, which means the deployment is successful, because there's no point in backing up the service when the deployment itself failed. Same time, I do not want to have infinite loop, so I want to loop 100 times and bail out and send message. You can see here, Orchestrator gives you a flexibility to include your loops, conditions, filters, handles, error messages in your runbooks. Okay, now that my deployment is successful, the next step is for me to start the backup process. Before that, I need to know what backup option has been selected in the portal, whether it's hourly backup or 8-hour backup. But with Orchestrator, you can pull the data from other systems, so you no longer have to talk to other person and wait for his response. So this is the step where I'm talking to my service manager and pulling the data from service request, because just Mark showed us that all the data from the portal is going to the service request class. I take the input from the user, pass on to my next step. This is where I'm talking to my data protection manager to create a protection group, and I'm installing my DPM agents. Now that my backup process is ready, the next step for me is to start the backing up the service, which means the VMs associated with the service. So in this step, I'm actually talking to my VMM server to get the VM names associated with that service. I pass on and call my child runbook. Orchestrator gives you an ability to call one runbook from another runbook, so you can always break down your complex problems into a simple runbooks. And another big usage is reusability. One thing to mention here is the VM property. As you can see, for the VM name, it may, instead of giving the VM names, I'm actually taking the value from the, my previous steps. This feature is called the published data, or the data bus. I can show that. Go right click, subscribe to, go to publish data, and you can see the previous steps from all your previous stuff from your runbook. So you can take the output from any step and pass on that as an input to this step. In this case, I want the VM output, so I'll take that output, I'll pass on that. So with that, I invoke my child runbook. This is the initialized data where I'm getting the values of my protection group and VM names. This is where I'm calling my DPM server to get all the data sources from that VM. And this is where, again, I'm talking to my data protection manager to protect the data sources. As you can see, when we integrate with any of the servers, we dynamically get the data related to that activity and present in a simple forms-based data. So you can fill up using your IT pro skills. You don't have to be a programmer to know a lot of coding. Next, I add that to protection group. The last two steps for installing the software, there are many ways to do it. Either I can use the run program, which comes out of the box, or I can use my configuration manager or integration pack, or I can use run PowerShell. That completes the two runbooks we've done to automate this task. As you have seen, Orchestrator really delivers its value in three different steps. The first one is integration. It enables you to integrate with other systems in your environment by providing all the tools and platforms. As you have seen, we are integrating with VMM, DPM, SM. The second thing is orchestration or control. So once you have all the platform and tools, then you can go ahead and control our processes and orchestrate your data center processes or scenarios. And finally, you can automate them to increase your ROI and reduce your cost. So that's Orchestrator. Thank you very much, Ryan. I hope you all have a great MMS session.
Thank you, Ravi. Ravi Chintalapudi. Okay, so we're going to keep moving here because we're just a demo too, and we're looking at about a half hour left in the keynote here. But the next one really started to look at the day-to-day operations of the running application. And here we talked about deep application insight. You know, if you think about the what we did over summer break while we were building System Center, we acquired the Opalis capabilities and have now rendered them into System Center as Orchestrator. We also acquired a company called AviCode, which gave us .NET application performance. And we've integrated that transaction level knowledge into System Center Operations Manager. And so a lot of the APM capabilities that I was referencing in this third demo were really about those integrated, now integrated AviCode capabilities shining through into our consoles. So we're going to have Daniel Savage come up here in just a minute and walk us through all of the monitoring capabilities that we were leveraging from MPs, from Watcher nodes, as well as the transaction monitoring we were capturing on the application server itself. We're then going to walk you through some of the diagnostics in more detail and show you how we were building and rendering some of that information in dashboards. So with that, please welcome Daniel Savage to the stage, who will walk you through all of these deep application insight capabilities.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you. So when we think about deep application insight or 360-degree monitoring, we think about enabling monitoring across four main aspects. First of all, availability, as in, is my application available and can my customers get to it? Secondly, is performance, meaning is my application performing at a speed that's reasonable for my users accessing it? Third is reliability, meaning is my application doing what it's supposed to be doing, returning the right information? And then lastly, diagnostics. How do we determine the root cause when we have problems and reduce that mean time to resolution? So as Ryan showed you this morning, he showed a problem with the expenses application and then remediated the issue. What I want to take you through in this session is how simple it is to configure that 360-degree monitoring, and then more importantly, how you can take the data generated from that and make it available to the people who want to be able to view it. So I'm going to go back into my IAM console here, and I'm going to switch across to the authoring tab. And we're going to start with setting up availability monitoring. In Operations Manager, we have a set of things called Management Pack Templates. These really simplify the configuration of how you get your monitoring set up. In System Center 2012, we have a new template called Web Application Availability Monitoring. And this is what's set up to do synthetic transactions against my expenses application. And what we've done is we've really tried to simplify the experience across all of these, simply by providing a couple of inputs, what to monitor, where to monitor it from. You can take your application in its endpoints and set up availability monitoring. So we see here, we have our Expense Manager URL. We have where to monitor it from, which is this is using the agent infrastructure and operations manager to run synthetic transactions against my application. And then I'm done. I fill in those two pieces of information, and that will get set up. I do have a set of advanced configuration I could go into, which is optional, which allows me to do things where I want to generate an alert when a response time breaches a value, or I want to do content match. I want to check for a particular value being returned by my application. So that's now set up. So that's the availability aspect of it. The next part is the performance and reliability, and this is where our integration of the AviCode technologies come in. So again, we have a template called .NET Application Performance Monitoring, and if I take you through this, again, you'll see a very similar set of screens, really simplifying that configuration. Now, performance and reliability monitoring comes across two aspects. First of all, is we can do monitoring across the server side. So that's running where the application is running and collecting the transactions as they flow through the system, determining whether exceptions are happening or performance violations. The second aspect is client-side monitoring. This is actually instrumenting the application so that when the user runs it and accesses it via the browser, we're going to capture that experience as well. So really getting down to the eyeball performance for the user. So again, through this template, what Operations Manager has done for me is discovered my application. I can select the components I want to monitor, and then again, through a very simple set of screens, all we have to do is we have a couple of checkboxes here to say I want to turn on monitoring. So there's no complex MP authoring, there's no need for you to understand the concepts that underlie what we're doing here. We simply check these boxes and turn it on. Now, this is important not just for applications you may have knowledge about, but if you have older applications or legacy applications running, getting this type of rich monitoring is as easy as running this wizard. Same for client-side monitoring. Again, I choose my frontier, and I'm going to get that last-mile performance. As with these, we do have a set of advanced settings through these wizards, so you can go in and fine-tune it and add more customization. So that is setting up. So now, running through those two wizards, I've configured those three aspects, availability and performance and reliability monitoring. Let's just take a quick look at a deeper dive into some of the data that is gathered once we have turned this on. So I'm going to go to my application monitoring folder here, and here we see the alerts being generated. So when we do have problems with the application, which Ryan obviously was this morning, we see that we're getting a lot of alerts generated. I can open up these alerts, and it gives me, like with most operations managers, it's going to give me a set of knowledge associated with it, and I can go in and drill into the event and see more details. So this is the client side. And what you can see here is a complete breakdown of what the user's actually experiencing and where the time's been taken, right from what time has been taken over the network for the time to render the DOM. Very rich set of information. But not only do we gather these pieces of information, we attempt to tie them together. So what we've done here, so this is on the client side, we've tied this together to the server side event. So we can actually move through the transaction and get down to that code level view that Ryan was showing this morning. So now we through availability monitoring, we can determine whether it's available. And then through this chain, we can determine where the problem exists. So before I get into now that we have a problem and escalate it to the developer, I want to talk about the second aspect, which is really making 360-degree data available to the personas who want to use it. So what we have and what Ryan showed this morning was these service-level dashboards. So that's taking the information we're collecting and making that available. What I want to show you is how easy it is to create these dashboards. So we have a new capability in 2012 to create these dashboard views. We have a set of templates available. I can click Next and give it a name. I can choose my service levels that are available. So these have been created to monitor the availability and performance aspects. Click OK. I can set the time range I want to view across that and then click Create. That is going to create that dashboard. Now, what's important about this and the dashboard infrastructure we have in OM is this dashboard, which you see here in this console, can be made available not just in the thick console here, but in the web console, so I can pass it out to who wants to be able to see it. And it's also available through our SharePoint integration as well. So if you have to make visualizations available to your IT manager or CIO, you can do so. So if I just go to the same view, this dashboard I've just created, and it'll load in a second. So that's one aspect of how we make that data available. The last part, and really kind of getting to the diagnostics aspect of it, is how do we tie together the operations manager information with the developer persona. So in operations manager, I'll just close this, under authoring, again under management pack templates, I've imported our Visual Studio 2010 connector, which allows me to take the information events generated and surface them in Visual Studio. Again, through a simple experience, I have the ability to specify where this information is going to be sent, okay, and what specific information I can send. So now when I have an alert and I need to escalate it, so we see here the components we want to escalate for and where in Visual Studio they're going to appear. As an operator, I can simply go back to where I had those alerts, right-click on the specific alert that was having the problem, and assign it to engineering. So now that alert gets passed over to Visual Studio so someone can actually diagnose and fix the problem. So there we have. That was covering how easy it is to set up that rich monitoring 360 and make the data available.
All right, nice job, Daniel. So one of the things we were working on there was to really integrate these new acquisitions into the product so that you have all of those new capabilities but deeply integrated into the experiences that you're already familiar with, both in Operations Manager and now with System Center Orchestrator. You'll see plenty of deep dives on OpsMan today and throughout the week. We encourage you to go check these couple out. Now, as we were working through demos 1, 2, and 3, we were starting to loosen up a little bit. We had a little bit of coffee. I don't know if you were following that. These cups are actually made, I've been asked many times where I can get a cup. These are actually made by one of our tech assistants backstage and his wife, Kenan Owen. So thank you to Kenan, who provided us with all the caffeine we need for our stage props. Now, as we came through into this fourth demo, we disclosed the new name of Windows Server 8, which will now be forever known as Windows Server 2012. And we started to show how System Center in Windows is really working hand in hand to make sure that the features in the core platform surface up to administrators of a private cloud or an enterprise data center. So some of the things that you saw today included how we're supporting things like SMB in Windows 8, how we are supporting large disk volumes in virtual machines. You saw some of the enhanced live migration work that Jeff showed. It was all pretty neat. So a lot of this is enabled by platform capabilities around storage virtualization and network virtualization, which are pieces that we're really working aggressively to pull into the System Center consoles. I also showed a update to App Controller, which allowed us to broker capacity between our on-premises console and capacity that we had acquired from a hoster. So a number of improvements here that then we're taking as part of System Center, and certainly we will deliver as updates in conjunction with Windows Server 2012. Now, to give you a deeper dive into those Win8 benefits as well as System Center, we're going to have Greg Cosanza come up to the stage and walk you through both of those experiences. So,
all right, Greg. Thanks, Ryan. So, as you saw today, the new capabilities in Windows Server 2012, they're huge. There's a lot for us to take advantage of in System Center, and we've been working hard to make those available to you in as easy of a way as possible. So I'm going to show you that right now by showing you how to use that storage that Jeff added to the storage pool. You saw him this morning, he added a disk to a storage pool, gave you a lot of free space. What better way is there to use that space than by creating VMs on it? Now with Windows Server 2012, Hyper-V will be able to use that space through an SMB file share. So I'm going to show you how you can make that available to your hosts through VMM. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the host properties of one of the hosts. This is the exact environment that you saw this morning. I'm going to go to the properties of this host. And in System Center 2012, we added this storage panel. It gives you a view of what all the storage on this host looks like. If you're familiar with that panel, then you'll notice that we also now, in our CTP, have a file share section. This is where you'll add a file share to this host. It's as simple as clicking Add Share, typing in the SMB path, and then pressing OK. When we do that, two things are going to happen. Number one, we're going to go out to the file server, and we're going to set the permissions that this host needs so that your VMs will be able to get created on there. You'll know that that host has access to it. If I actually open up the properties again, you can see that we've added it, and we know we have access to the share. I can actually show you on the share itself. If I go to the properties here, go to security, you can see that we've added the host machine right here. We've added that host machine to that share and the file system. So that host can use it. We'll do the same thing with a cluster. You can add that share to a cluster. And when you do that, we'll make all of those machines have access to the share within the cluster. So we make it very simple to consume that SMB space. The other thing which you'll see later is that now that location will be considered by our intelligent placement algorithm, so that you'll be able to place VMs onto that storage. All right, while I'm in the Fabric view in VMM, let's go down to networking. You know, you saw some really neat things with network virtualization, where Jeff basically showed you a set of isolated networks that we had in our environment. Now, if you look at what we have in the Fabric network, you'll see we have one network, one subnet. If you want to do this type of isolation today in your production data centers, you're probably using VLANs or some sort of physical separation of the networks. But you see, we didn't do that here. If I wanted to do it here, I'd have to call up my network admin. He'd have to give me a VLAN. He'd probably give me a small subnet. It might take him, you know, a few days. But you know what? I want to do that right now. I don't want to wait. We only have a few minutes left in the demo. So I'm going to go and create my VM network now, myself. So let's go to our VMs and services view. And the VM networks panel, which is new in our CTP. And you can see here all the isolated networks you saw this morning. I'm going to create a new VM network for myself. I'm going to call it Greg's network. I'm going to put it on the shared network that I showed you with the one subnet. And then I'm going to add my own. This is my customer subnet. This is basically an IP space that I defined myself. This subnet is only for me. It's completely isolated from the other ones. And Hyper-V will make sure that my traffic is not shared with the other subnets out there. So I'm going to just call it whatever I want. And I'm going to give it my subnet space, 0.0.24. That'll give me 256 addresses. But I want all of the addresses, so I'm going to give 8 for that. So you can see we just created the new VM network, Greg's network, right here. One more thing I need to do, though, before I can use this, I need to create an IP pool. So this will let VMM actually assign addresses to the VMs that I create on there. So I'm going to call it Greg IP. You can see my VM network is selected. I'm going to hit Next. You can see we automatically filled in the range. I have 60 million addresses. That, I think, will be enough for at least a little while. And I'm just going to finish this wizard now and create my IP pool. And that's it. You saw me. Within a few seconds, I created an isolated network, completely isolated from everyone else. IP address space completely overlaps. I can define whatever address space I want within that network, and it's ready to use. So I'm going to create a VM right now that uses that network. Whoops. Don't want to convert a physical server at this time. That's a different demo. Let's try that again. All right, so I'm going to create a new VM. Click Next. I'm going to give it a name, Greg VM. And before I select my network, I want to talk a little bit about virtual hard disks. Now, there's a new format Jeff mentioned this morning. You should all be excited about it. In fact, you have 64 terabytes worth of reasons to be excited. And it's as simple as typing in 64,000 right there. We'll create a 64 terabyte or a disk that can be expanded up to 64 terabytes. Now, you should also be excited about the new VHDX format because it has built-in journaling, so it's more robust. It's also aligned for the newer 4K sector-sized drives that are out there. So in your new environments, you might have those today already. So now I'm going to select that VM network that I just created. These are all the other ones. Here's Greg's network. Now I'm going to finish the wizard. But before I do that, our intelligent placement algorithm is now going to look at all the hosts out there. It's going to pick one of them. Well, actually, it'll pick. Let me choose one of them. These are all available. And you'll see that it saw that SMB share that I just added to it, and now it sees how much space is there and decided this is the best place for this VM. So now I'm going to put this VM there, and it'll create it on that SMB share. And once that's created there, now any other machine that can see that share, you can live migrate it. You don't have to do shared nothing like you saw today. You can still use shared storage as an SMB share and do quick live migrations between the machines. You can even do live migrations between clusters if you want as well. That pretty much sums it up. You know, there's a lot coming. Windows Server 8, this is just the beginning. Or Windows Server 2012, this is just the beginning. So as Ryan mentioned, no smoke and mirrors. You can download this CTP today.
All right. And rather than bring the hoster data center upstage, I'd ask that you believe that we actually had that hosted capacity contracted actually in an external data center that we integrated into App Controller using the credentials that you saw. You'll see more on Hyper-V storage. But one of the key things to take away here is as these improvements are coming out in Windows 2012, surfacing up into Virtual Machine Manager, the benefits are certainly there for data center administrators, but also as you start to think about the pieces we saw in Service Manager and Orchestrator, now we can start to expose these capabilities as new IT services. So those virtual networks, those self-service networks that Greg was creating on the fly, you could actually imagine exposing that as an offering on a future, you know, SM portal. That gets orchestrated and the tasks shredded by Service Manager and orchestrated and automated by Orchestrator. So lots of cool things that we can start to imagine as we put all of these pieces together that you've just seen. Now, there's a whole bunch to consume here. You know, we've got a number of experts that you've gotten to see. I certainly needed to rely on them as we built out these demos that cross such a broad portfolio of capabilities. One of the things that we have revved for System Center 2012 is the infrastructure planning and design guides, specifically to help you build and deploy these technologies and achieve similar results to what you saw in the keynote today. These slides will be available after this talk, and rather than read that URL, I will let you click on it at your leisure. The other thing that we wanted to do, at least for one person in the room, is to offer you a on-site proof of concept where we would take a group of our experts and land them in your environment and help you to stand up System Center in your context and help you to achieve similar results as you've seen today. So if you could look under your chairs, there's I'm told there's an envelope under one lucky winner, and we'll see somewhere over there-ish if you find such an envelope. You guys can stop looking over on this side. And we do have a lucky winner in the audience, so that's great. So that basically will entitle you to having a set of Microsoft employees come and hang out and share with you the capabilities that are in System Center 2012 and help you to get that up and running in your environment. We can chat afterwards. So just to wrap it all up here and get you going on to the next level of deep dives where you can learn more about what we talked about. I'd ask that you start to think about how you're going to plan and prepare for your System Center 2012 deployments. You have a private cloud in your pocket, as Brad said in the keynote. We have a guide that's available for you to download and get started along with the bits. And what I would ask more than anything is that we use this week to be a productive group together. We've got Microsoft employees generally in blue shirts, ready to answer any questions that they can. If they don't know the answers, I promise you that they will see to it that we get you whatever help and assistance that you require. And if there's feedback that you have for us, I'd love to hear it in your forms, but even more so, bring it to me directly or to my inbox. I'm ryano@microsoft.com, and I would welcome a conversation from any of you in any of the experiences you've had, any of the challenges that you'd like us to solve. So with that, thank you for taking an insider look at the keynote. I hope you enjoyed this morning. I hope you enjoyed the longer view, and I hope you have a great MMS. Thanks.